Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I think Mother Earth wants far less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics, like mercury, PFAS, pesticides, are playing in our daily lives. My guest today is Troy Moon. He's a sustainability coordinator for the city of Portland, Maine. And this means that Troy communicates with Portland residents, city employees, and other towns regarding sustainability, climate, and environment initiative. He organizes efforts to reduce carbon emissions, manages resources wisely, and prepares for the impacts of climate change. Troy, thank you so much for being here with me on What Mama Wants today.
Yeah, sure. Happy to be here, Kate.
So in 2018, Portland enacted one of the very first and most restrictive ordinances in the country regarding the use of pesticides. Why were residents so eager to ban the use of outdoor pesticides like glyphosate, which is the key ingredient to Roundup and other pesticides?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely been something that was a concern to Portland residents for a really long time. And I think there's several reasons why. First, people are concerned about the long-term impacts of pesticides and toxic chemicals on the environment. Certainly, where we live close to Casco Bay, and anything that goes onto pavement particularly, or even onto landscapes, eventually a lot of it ends up in Casco Bay, which reduces our quality of our waterways. So that's a concern. But people also were concerned about the possible impacts of human health. Studies indicate that many pesticides maybe cause cancer or cause other health impacts on the population. And people want to make sure that they live in a healthy environment where they feel safe, their children feel safe, their pets feel safe, being on lawns and in the parks and on our sidewalks. So,
yeah. And what kind of pests are people spraying for?
Yeah. So I think, the same types of things people use them for around the country. People are concerned about their lawns. And so we have people who spray for what a lot of people consider to be weeds, dandelions, or other things that they, don't think are attractive. People spray to control insects in their gardens. People can spray to reduce weeds on their walkways and on the pavements. So, those are things that we address in our ordinance. So we have a land care ordinance, not a broad. Some pesticides certainly are still legal in Portland, but we definitely are addressing those land care type of products.
To be clear, that would be things outside, not inside. So if you have have carpenter ants, this doesn't apply.
That's right. So yeah, our ordinance exempts things like carpenter ants, insects that might damage your property. It also exempts things that might cause impacts to human health. So ticks and mosquitoes, and also like poison ivy. If you had poison ivy on your property and you were concerned about your children getting in the poison ivy, our ordinance does allow you to use a spray to control that. But, again, people have concerns about, pesticides widely.
I think one of the fabulous things about your ordinance is it's not just public lands. It's also personal property. Because pesticides can link to cancers of brain, breast, testes, ovaries, as well as infertility, some of the lymphoma, leukemia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's kinds of things, it's a really big public health issue. It seems to me that there might be a little bit of a social justice angle to this ban as well, because really, who are the people that are most likely to be applying the chemicals and getting the most exposure?
So I think certainly can be part of it. That wasn't explicitly part of the process when we were drafting the ordinance, but I think you're correct that there is a benefit, because certainly people who do applications, maybe it's a job that they feel they have to take. But on the other hand, many of the folks who do this line of work are highly trained as well and do recognize the threats that pesticides pose to them.
It always surprises me that towns put those little stakes in the ground that say, we just sprayed pesticides, so keep your kids and dogs away because it's toxic, but come tomorrow and have picnics on it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. One of the reasons that, the public particularly was interested in making a transition to organic approaches to land care was exactly that. People wanted to feel safe in their parks and on their playgrounds. And many residents were concerned about exactly that. Is there going to be residue in the park or on the playground after an application that's going to endanger their children or endanger the dogs? We have lots of dogs here in Portland and they enjoy playing in the parks. And so that's a big concern. And so that's a real concern for people, that we want to make sure our open spaces are safe. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, our ordinance is not just for public spaces. It applies to private property too, because the overarching goal of our ordinance and our approach is to promote healthy soils. I mean, healthy soils are kind of the foundation for a healthy environment, and the whole like food web and the web of life all comes back to healthy soils. If we don't have plants that are growing, there's no food for the birds and the other animals in the environment. And if we're spraying pesticides on the plants or on the soils, we're disrupting the soil environment, and just basically perpetuating a cycle of having to add fertilizers, having to add pesticides just to keep things growing. So ultimately, if we can just build those healthy soils and keep building that organic matter and building, the bacteria and fungi that are in the soils, that's ultimately better for the environment as a whole. It supports all of the, all the birds, all of the insects that we need to have a healthy environment that ultimately we depend on too. So, I mean, that's kind of, we try to focus on that more holistic approach. If we keep trying to isolate, we're going to solve this problem by putting a pesticide on the soil, it doesn't kill just that particular pest. It kills all the insects, and we need those insects, and need to think bigger picture, think outside of like dealing this one micro problem. What's the macro problem that will cause if we're just fixating on that one thing?
Yeah, looking at the whole system. I love that you're thinking about soil, because I think somehow we left it out, but we kind of forgot the actual soil.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, again, it's the foundation of a healthy environment. So we care a lot about it here in Portland. We've transitioned all of our park space to organic land care, and I give kudos to our staff in the Parks Department. You know, as we were working on this ordinance, we're really concerned about what the impacts were going to be. They were worried about whether they would be able to keep up the quality of the parks, keep up the quality of the athletic fields without using, I don't know why we call them traditional methods now, because they're really not that traditional. They just started being in use in the last, 50, 70 years, but, a product-based approach to managing our fields. And they found that they could do it. And there was different techniques. We had to do some training with staff. And I again, hats off to them. They really embraced it and saw it as an opportunity to learn and try new approaches. And they've been really successful at it. So we had a great demonstration right here in Portland on Fox Field, which is a field that's right in Kennedy Park, which is one of the lower income neighborhoods in the city. And, this athletic field that was kind of beaten down and it gets lots of use because a lot of kids come and play soccer and there's school athletics and highly intensive use, but with some real hard work and thinking through some processes and taking a different approach. Now it's a very healthy field. It's so much nicer looking than it was before. And I'm really pleased that we have, this high quality space that's available for a lot of the kids who come and play on that field every day. But yeah, I mean, it improves it for everybody for sure.
I love it. I love it for the kids that are playing there. And I love it for the people who are taking care of the fields. Yep. They were really in the crosshairs, the kinds of things that eye and central nervous system and skin and hormone endocrine disruption that happens from inorganic pesticides, man-made toxics, are really substantial for people who are exposed frequently.
Yeah, for sure.
My next guest is going to be a young woman who at age 2 went and played in the park and got a very violent reaction to the pesticides and really suffered for decades until she really recovered her health. So kudos to you all for being so proactive. People don't know how lucky they are to live in Portland, Maine. Or maybe they do. Maybe I think people in Portland, Maine know that they're pretty lucky.
Yeah, a lot of us are pretty happy to live here. And I think being, environmentally concerned and concerned about climate action, definitely it's a kind of an ethic here in Portland. We have our council is very supportive of these measures. I know our public is very supportive, and it's great to work in a city that really supports the work that we do in our office.
It's many people working together in the same direction, a powerful unit. So the city of Portland cares for all kinds of outdoor spaces, as you mentioned, public lawns, gardens, athletic fields, parks, playgrounds. And you've been doing that without pesticides since 2018, successfully. Mm-hmm. Bravo. And recently, the Portland City Council amended the ordinance to also include a restriction on the use of synthetic fertilizers, which will go into effect in just a couple of weeks on March 19th. Could you explain the thinking there and the process for enacting that change?
Sure.
So actually, when we passed the original ordinance, our intent at the time was to do pesticides and fertilizers, but the process, the public process and the political process to make sure we, you know, cover all our bases with the pesticide piece was a lot of work. So kind of carved off the fertilizer part to get the pesticide component of the ordinance up and running smoothly, and then wanted to come back and do the fertilizer piece. So our team, we're working with the public. We have a committee of citizens who helps us work on this issue. Our Land Care Management Advisory Committee wanted to, you know, kind of pick that issue up again and start working on fertilizers. So we recommended to the city council that we make that now's the time to take on the fertilizers. So the pesticides are going fine now. And we got it through the council, explained the reasons why we wanted to do that, which is basically comes back to healthy soils again. We want, rather than having a synthetic fertilizer that kind of juices activity, we want to promote a more organic approach. Even organic fertilizer is generally slower acting, but over time, it's going to build more of that soil environment we want to have that will sustain the life more effectively. So again, we convinced the city council. It didn't take much convincing. They understood the issues and voted unanimously to move forward with the restrictions on synthetic fertilizers. And as you say, we're starting on March 19th. But I do want to note that it's not just synthetic fertilizers. We actually added restrictions on organic fertilizers too. Again, coming back down to mostly water quality, because again, putting on more nutrient than the soil can take up, it's going to run off, which ultimately goes into Casco Bay. And we care a lot about Casco Bay. Working with our partners like Friends of Casco Bay and others, we learned that, you know, too much nutrient going into the bay is causing algal blooms and diminishing our water quality, leading to more acidification of our coastal waters. So we want to make sure people are using fertilizers properly. So we're requiring people, if you're going to apply a fertilizer, even an organic fertilizer, to do so when it's appropriate. So you need to get a soil test, which you can get from Cooperative Extension. And then if the soil test calls for amendment, you can go ahead and do it. But people overdo it. And we want to kind of stop that overdoing, which ultimately causes more harm than good. So if some is good, too much is not good, right? So we're definitely focusing on only applying fertilizer when it's necessary in the amounts that are necessary.
Yes, more is not always better.
Right.
Yeah. So how do you enforce this when you've asked everybody to please not use pesticides and inorganic fertilizers or too much organic fertilizers? How does a town manage that?
Right. So for pesticides, it's, I guess I won't say it's straightforward, but it's a little more obvious. So we have requirements about posting signage. We have reporting requirements. We can monitor that the best we can. Again, it's not always easy. You know, we're not everywhere. We're not going to go into someone's garage and inspect. In fact, they would be legal to have the pesticides. We just don't want them to use them. But we're not going to, you know, we can't be everywhere. So on the professional applicators, it's somewhat easier because whenever they do an application, they have to post a sign and they have to report to us. So we can keep track of that. And then in cases when maybe the professional applicators aren't doing it right, there's documentation we can follow up. In fact, we did issue a fine to a commercial applicator just this past summer for violating the ordinance. It's trickier for homeowners. And so a lot of times we really have to focus on education. We may get a report from a resident that someone in the neighborhood is applying a pesticide that's not allowed in Portland. So, but if we don't have any documentation, if we didn't see that, it's really hard to take enforcement action. So we'll follow up with the resident that may have been using a prohibited substance and, you know, remind them of the ordinance, provide some education. Here's an approach you should be taking. And generally that's been pretty good. We've had some good conversations with residents and, you know, most people want to do the right thing. And then if that continues, and luckily it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, if we had repeated issues with a resident, we could take more action against them. But I think the fertilizer one's going to be tougher in a lot of ways, because there's not posting requirements. There's no board of pesticide control requirements that you need to put up a sign when you did fertilizer. So we have to be leaning really, really heavily on education. So we're ramping up our education campaign. This program is one of our first steps to let people know that the fertilizer prohibitions come into effect. And our campaign is all about healthy soils, and happy lawns, and happy landscapes. So again, get the message across that, you know, that's what we want. We want to promote soil health. We want to do things that improve the quality of the soils. And here are some practices that you can do to make that happen. And we also want to help people understand there's definitely a place for turf grass. A lot of people want to have some lawn in front of their home for the kids and the dogs to play, or just set up a lawn chair and talk to your neighbors as they go by the house. But there's a great opportunity to think about maybe there's a rain garden or a pollinator garden you could do in the backyard or the front yard. And that might be a great way to do it. And you wouldn't need to have so many inputs and wouldn't have to work so hard mowing. And we also talk a lot about making sure that if you're going to have plants, that you put the right plant in the right place, which will also reduce your need for inputs. If you're trying to grow bluegrass under a pine tree, you're going to have a really hard time. So pick the right thing in the right place, kind of being more holistic. Think about the landscape as a whole and what wants to be where, and what are the light conditions, what are the soil conditions, and what are the plants that will thrive in each of those types of environment. And we're trying to demonstrate that in the city by creating more native habitats, more pollinator gardens, more low-mow, low-maintenance areas that, you know, might at first glance kind of look unkempt and like, what are you guys doing over there with that big overgrown grass? But, you know, that's intentional. We're trying to show that there is a space for more wild-looking landscapes, and maybe you'll see fireflies, maybe you'll see butterflies and more birds who want to be in that type of space that's not mowed every week.
Yeah, I think that's very exciting because healthy soil just is the start. You know, if you like butterflies, if you like bees, if you like food.
Yep. You got to have the healthy soils with the plants that are growing and the native plants that, you know, food for the birds who are looking for insects that might only grow on those native plants. And maybe the beneficial insects that the birds eat may not grow on that exotic plant that shows up in your garden. The birds eat the insects that are on those native plants. So thinking again, how does it all play together?
I was looking at Beyond Pesticides, which is a website that you had referred me to, and I really appreciated all that is on there. One of the things that's on there is a recent article that gives recognition to Portland, South Portland, and Ogunquit, Maine, and Montgomery County, Maryland, because you all are really pioneers. You're way out ahead on this, at least in the United States. In Europe, they already did this, but we're doing it town by town. However, currently, Senator Cory Booker has submitted some legislation to try to make this more of a national movement. I wonder, how easy do you think this would be for other municipalities to replicate this ordinance, or if we end up getting more national laws in this nature?
So we're fortunate in Maine that we're what we call a home rule state. So anything that's not prohibited by the legislature, we can do. So in Maine, the legislature never said municipalities can't control pesticides. So that gives us the authority to do that. So in Maine, I won't say it's easier, but we have a road forward for communities that want to regulate pesticides. And so many communities in Maine have done so. There's actually a list. If you went to the Maine Board of Pesticide Control website, there's a list of different communities in Maine that have some sort of restrictions on pesticides. And I think we probably have more in Maine than in any other state in the country because of that. And because there's pretty widespread concern about, you know, the impacts of pesticides going back decades. And I think if you looked at the list of communities that have done work to restrict pesticides, some of them go back into the 70s because the concerns about pesticides and the dangers they pose to people's health and the environment are longstanding, especially in Maine with people who came to Maine from other parts of the country, you know, back to the land movement and concern about organic agriculture and organic living. So basically in Maine, it's process probably not dissimilar to what we had in Portland with citizens who are concerned about the impacts of pesticides and also fertilizers on health and environment, organizing themselves, communicating with elected officials and city officials to, you know, explain what the concerns are about and getting them to take some action. So we have that path forward. And, you know, it sounds like if Senator Booker's legislation moves forward, that would be a pathway that citizens in other states would have as well.
I think it's really exciting. And I think actually the home rule thing is a pretty important spice in our soup here in Maine. It's part of what makes Maine so unique because you can have such different personalities in different towns. Changing our mindsets about how outdoor spaces should look and be treated turns out to be kind of a bold move. The city of Portland has a terrific web page, which can help people to learn new ways of maintaining lawns, gardens, and outdoor spaces without chemical fertilizers and pesticides, which I will link to on the website, or you can search at portlandmaine.gov/landcare. Troy, part of your job is to imagine what a healthier, cleaner future might look like for Portland, Maine, and then plan for that, which is mighty cool. How might the ban on chemical fertilizers and pesticides look for Portland and Casco Bay over the next few years and decades?
Mm-hmm. So I think about it in terms of kind of the broader impacts, you know, because again, my job is to implement the city's climate action plan. So I'm really concerned about climate action. And if we look at, you know, the climate in general, there's kind of intersecting crises, you know, we have, and they all are related. So there's rising seas and increasing heat. But one of the things that's intersecting also is a biodiversity crisis. One of the things that's contributing to the biodiversity crisis is widespread application of pesticides that destroys habitat, poisons pollinators, birds, other wildlife. So I think we have our pesticide ordinance. It was again passed by our city council, and to just make a statement and to improve the environment in our corner of the world and set an example of what things could look like. So I kind of imagine, again, I say it again, healthier soils, you know, as the foundation, as the foundation of a healthy environment that is growing, providing food for insects, that provide food for birds and other wildlife, and that ultimately supports, you know, human life as well. And then without excess inputs of chemicals, fertilizers, and pesticides going into the waterways, into Casco Bay, again, promoting a healthier marine environment, which as a coastal community, we depend on not only for tourism, because everyone comes to Portland, partly because they want to see the beauty of Casco Bay and go out and onto the islands and boat around, but also it's an important part of our economy. The blue economy, fishing, marine industries are vital to our way of life here economically as well as culturally. So that's why we want to protect those and improve them and keep them from being degraded any further and bringing them back to life in some ways. So that's kind of what I see. Imagining our climate action plan is between now and 2050. And we talk about how do we make sure in Portland that the way of life that we value is accessible to everybody in our community. And maybe it's even better in 2050. We know we have to address the impacts of climate change, but it gives us an opportunity to be thoughtful and think about what, you know, what is our path forward? How do we create that future that we want, a healthy environment and opportunity for all of our residents? And this is, you know, this is part of it.
I am really quite captivated by this process because I think when I hear about climate change, it's generally a very heavy weight that people can hardly squirm underneath. Mm-hmm. It's so uncomfortable. And yet what you've done by having a plan is to imagine things going well, which we don't do all that often. And then you just set the course up and how do we get there? And I think it's really exciting and also kind of important for our mental health to know that we can take action and do better as a result.
Yeah, no, I think that's really important. And, you know, I'm not Pollyannish. I know that those challenges are great. We're already seeing severe impacts of climate change. We're fortunate in Portland and in Maine in general. We haven't had the impacts that other parts of the world and other parts of the country have felt, but we know we are going to have some. We see the increase of nuisance flooding has gone up just in the time I've lived in Portland for the last 25 years. It's much more frequent now, and it's going to become more frequent. We're going to have more hot days. We're going to have more folks are going to want to come to Maine and other places in New England that are maybe less impacted. So there's absolutely going to be challenges, but if we focus only on the things that are negative, we're not going to be proactive. And I think we need to be proactive and we need to have a vision of what we're trying to achieve and what we want. Because without a plan, you won't get where you want to go, right? So that's why I'm really excited and so pleased that our elected officials are so supportive and have endorsed our climate action plan and are giving us resources to implement it. So yeah, I'm happy. And again, our climate action plan, we developed it in collaboration with the city of South Portland. And partly that was, you know, we wanted to pool our resources and have some more resources to work with to do our plan. But we also were really intentional that we wanted to kind of show that collaboration is really important. If we're going to, you know, Portland could have the best climate action plan and South Portland could have an awesome climate action plan, but if they didn't interact, if we weren't communicating and making sure that we're kind of marching into the future together, it wouldn't be as effective as if we were just doing it ourselves. So we wanted to show the region and the state that this collaboration is really important. And we're really pleased that other towns in Maine and around the country call us up and ask us for some recommendations and how did you do that? And, you know, and we're happy to share that.
Kudos, Portland and South Portland. I love that you did that. And I love that NRCM recognized you for that effort as well.
Yeah, thanks. It was a nice surprise.
Yeah. As the sustainability coordinator for Maine's largest city, what do you suspect Mama wants, like Mother Earth? What does she want when it comes to synthetic fertilizers and chemical pesticides?
So I think largely she would like us to use a lot less of them for a lot of the reasons we talked about before, promoting the biodiversity, promoting the soil health that everything depends on. Again, just getting away from this thinking of things as isolated problems, because as you look at ecosystems, everything is so interdependent. We can't take one piece out of it without impacting another piece of it. So like we said, if you're trying to kill this pest that's bothering my garden, you know, well, you kill that pest, but you're also killing other elements in the soil and other insects that maybe would otherwise help your garden. And they certainly help wildlife around in the environment. So again, moving away from that kind of single issue thinking and thinking about how things are interrelated and relate to each other in a holistic perspective. I think that's what Mama wants us to do.
Yeah, quit it. So to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the earth, if you're game.
Sure.
As a kid, what did you like to do outside in nature?
I was outdoor all the time. I still am. I love going hiking and riding my bike, hanging out in my crazy garden. That's just being outdoors. Just being outdoors all the time.
What's so crazy about your garden?
Well, it's totally atypical of what you would find in someone's yard. Our backyard is a rain garden, and it is all like water-loving plants. So my backyard looks very much like a riverbank you'd find in Maine. So all the same types of plants. But it's not manicured in any way. But it's full of birds and insects and butterflies. It's very cool.
That is very cool. Can you describe a scene in nature where you have felt awe?
Yes, quite a few, actually. I've had the good fortune to be able to travel around the United States and different places. If you asked me a different day, I'd probably give you a different answer. But I was able to do a trip out to the Wind River Range in Wyoming a number of years ago. And a friend and I were climbing in the Cirque of the Towers and just being up on top of one of those granite spires and looking out at the expanse of the Rocky Mountains from, 14,000 feet. Not everyone gets the chance to do that. And it was mind-blowing. It's very cool.
Changes your perspective.
Sure does.
What's one thing you currently wonder about when it comes to nature?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just wondering how it all works in general. It's just so amazing. Thinking of going back to healthy soil, it's just how it all works together. And, it's so complicated and it's like a symphony of different pieces of bacteria and fungi and minerals and how one creature does something that benefits another creature that keeps the system going. It's just so elegant, amazing.
Elegance, beautiful word for it. And the last question is, what is your favorite baby animal?
Baby goats, because I love watching them on Instagram. Because I don't know, it's one of my stress relief things. It's watching little baby goats whanging all around. They're fun and fun to watch and relaxing. It makes me laugh. The bouncing baby goats in pajamas, it's hard to beat that. It's pretty much the top of the cuteness scale.
It is way up there. Troy, you are supporting changes away from toxics that will improve the health of our local environment for everyone going forward. And your networking support and advocacy are making the city of Portland a national example. Thank you so much for doing the work you're doing and for being my guest today on What Mama Wants.
You're welcome.